This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. This month, we're getting statistics on the first half of the year in syphilis cases, and the Lee County Department of Health is sounding the alarm. So far, there are more new cases in just the first 6 months of 2017 than in all of 2016. In the second half of the show, we'll learn about the disease, why it's spreading so fast, and how it's treated these days. But first, mental health care centers in Florida are blindsided by a budget shortfall after this year's late negotiated statewide budget went into effect July 1st. A $20.4 million gap in funding was left. That's money that went to places like Salus Care in Fort Myers, which provides mental health treatment, help for people battling addiction, and provides a place for kids in crisis to find shelter and help. Salus Care says it will see $750,000 less in state funding. That will leave 800 children a year without a place to turn in crisis. It will decrease Salus Care personnel by at least two caseworkers who help more than 150 substance abuse patients, and it will take away mental health care from 250 people. In an era when people like to talk about the need for better mental health care, and at a time when the country is facing a national emergency with the opioid epidemic, how does a state budget pass with severe cuts like this for organizations like Salus Care, and why did no one see it coming? Here to talk about its $750,000 cut in state funding is Salus Care CEO Stacy Cook-Hawk. Stacy, thanks for being part of the program.
Thanks for having me.
We are talking about mental health and addiction treatment centers having their budgets cut. Have you or someone you love been treated at a place like Salus Care? We'd like to hear your story to better understand exactly who is being helped and how critical these services are. Give us a call and share your story at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can share with us via social media on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So, Stacy, when did it first become apparent that Salus Care was going to lose $750,000 in state funding?
We learned about the cuts in probably the middle of June, and we were surprised. We were absolutely taken by surprise. We were finishing up our budgets, getting ready to move into the new fiscal year, and we learned about this, that apparently it happened at the end of session.
Yeah, the tail end of session, they approved the budget and it didn't have that 20.4. Had that been part of your budget for a long time?
It has.
And that's part of a federal grant system that was then passed through the Senate and then down?
Yes.
Or the legislature?
Correct.
What does that money pay for? Is it earmarked specifically for certain things?
It is. That's a great question. It's earmarked for crisis unit beds for our children. $295,000 of that cut, we were told we need to pull from Children's Crisis Services. Essentially what that means is that's 800 beds. That's 800 children, excuse me, that we won't be able to serve because of that funding cut. Additionally, we're looking at $350,000 in our adult substance abuse residential treatment program, and that comes out to 5,500 beds. We're talking about 60 to 110 adults with substance abuse issues that we won't be able to treat. Additionally, we're looking at $70,000 in funding for pregnant women who have substance use disorders, dependent children that we would typically be able to outreach to and help. And finally, but not last, we have a huge loss in psychiatric services for children and adults, and that's going to stop us from being able to serve about 250 people.
And typically you would send them somewhere else, but this is hitting all the places that you would send them when you don't have the resources.
Exactly. Matter of fact, I was on the phone today with Scott Burgess at the David Lawrence Center, and they're experiencing a $300,000 loss. So we're talking about $1 million in our community, and we work very closely together. If our crisis unit is at capacity, we work together in order to carefully transfer patients back and forth. But when we're both suffering this kind of devastating cut, it's going to be very difficult to take care of the community.
So this is $20.4 million that just fell through the cracks. But then there was a $27 million federal grant for opiate addiction that was sent to the state. Did lawmakers assume that $27 million could be used to fill this gap?
I'm not sure what they assumed, but what it looks like and what we're hearing is we heard this message about a month ago that Florida was flooded with more behavioral health funding than it ever had with the $27 million in addition. The problem is that, yes, we received $27 million, but $20 million was pulled out of base core funding for critical services. So unfortunately, what it sounds like is there was a mishap of some sort in Tallahassee. I can't speak to it, but I know that they're working on trying to figure out a way to remedy this.
Yeah, that's the question that I have also. What happens going forward? We now know that this happened. There's $20.4 million that's not there. $27 million came in from the federal government, so you're kind of net up a little under $7 million. Where did that go? And is that specifically for a certain type of treatment?
It is specifically for a certain type of treatment. That $27 million, a significant portion of it, I believe about $16 million, is going towards something called medication-assisted therapy. Those are drugs that are injected into addicts to reduce cravings, Suboxone, buprenorphine, and Vivitrol. Unfortunately, organizations like Salus Care can't take advantage of that because we don't have a robust MAT, is what I'll call it, medication-assisted treatment program in place. Ironically, we have a 30-bed detox unit, and 80% of that capacity is occupied by folks with opioid addiction. But still, we're unable to take advantage of any of that $27 million. And mm-hmm. we're looking at losing $750,000. So this is huge.
It's a big problem. So according to the Naples Daily News, the Senate, under the leadership of Joe Negron, allocated $15 million solely for a drug called Vivitrol. Back in June, NPR did a story about this drug, which reportedly is taken once every 30 days, like you say, and it's used to treat addiction to opioids. The story focused on a lobbyist from a pharmaceutical company working through state legislatures, going state to state, trying to get them to favor and then fund the use of this drug. Well, in Florida, it got $15 to $16 million. Does Salus Care, you said, doesn't have a robust pharmaceutical treatment program, but does something like this work? And if it does it have to be accompanied by counseling or other treatment?
Boy, you said it. You hit the nail on the head. Does it work? It works for some. It doesn't work for everyone. It's kind of like penicillin or Keflex or an antibiotic. I have the flu or some sort of infection and I take an antibiotic, it may or may not work. There's a lot of investment in medication-assisted therapy as the panacea to resolve the opioid crisis.
Well, everybody wants a magic bullet. You just give somebody a pill or a shot and everything's okay. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. In this instance and many others, this isn't a panacea. In fact, if an individual chooses to get involved with medication-assisted therapy, they also need to have wraparound services. And what do I mean by that? I mean counseling, weekly counseling, case management services. I mean, linked, these folks who have been using for many, many years need health care. They need access to assistance with paying for rent, perhaps getting housing, assistance getting in to the facility to actually receive the medication. This is the need for a robust treatment team to work with these folks to help them to be successful on a medication-assisted therapy. It has to be accompanied by wraparound treatment.
So if somebody comes, they get a shot, they're good for 30 days, and they don't have problems with feelings like they need to go find opiates, and then they have to come back every 30 days?
They do.
Do they?
Well, good question, because the no-show rate for folks coming back to get ongoing injections in the absence of a support system is significantly high. Now, what's going to happen in 30 days if you don't return? You're going to begin to crave, you're going to start looking for opiates, and then the cycle repeats itself. So hence the need for a wraparound treatment team to help folks to come in to that next injection appointment if, in fact, that's the treatment that an individual is choosing.
So if you have a pregnant mother who is addicted, does something like Vivitrol work for them? Is that cleared for women who are pregnant to use?
There are risks associated with it, but it is being offered to pregnant women, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel sometimes that the state legislature was kind of sold on a solution and then funneled money that way and left other forms of treatment kind of in the lurch?
I do. The way that this was pitched, and certainly if I was on the other – I work in this field. This is what I do every day. If I didn't know anything and someone said to me, look, this is the pill. This is it. It immediately eliminates cravings and this is how we can cure the opioid crisis. I'd say absolutely. I'll take 16 million of those. Unfortunately, there's much more to the story. So the legislature heard the foreword, maybe the preface. Unfortunately, they didn't get to the first chapter.
Mm-hmm. They got the Cliff's Notes version.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit more about your program that you offer for pregnant women with addiction problems. What do you do with women who come to you with an issue with addiction, but they are pregnant and they want a healthy baby?
The start of it is that we have a treatment team that works in some of the local OBGYNs. And literally, we have to do some outreach and we work to engage women who may not be receptive to treatment, although the doctor is pushing it and saying, look, we need you to be healthy. We need you to stay sober. And so we're working, making contact several times a week, visiting pregnant mothers at their home, doing whatever we can to encourage them to get involved in either residential services if they need it, if they're at that particular level of care, or to come into outpatient services and receive critical counseling, parenting skills, linkage to needed services like food, assistance in paying for electricity, securing housing. We're really working with these women to address holistically all of their needs so that we can increase the chances that they're going to remain sober and we're going to have a healthy baby born.
So the cuts that you're looking at, what kind of cuts are you looking at in the ability to work with pregnant women?
Well, this will eliminate our program. It's $70,000. So it will essentially eliminate our ability to focus primarily on pregnant women.
How many women do you serve in a year on average?
We had a couple of case managers, and they were able to carry what we would call a client load of 40 people. So we're talking 80 to 100 individuals that we wouldn't be able to work with. And the other thing you need to know, what we would also do is outreach is a huge component of what we need to do in order to gain the trust of individuals who may not be so receptive to treatment. And that was a big part of what we did in order to engage the pregnant women population. So we won't have that person outposted at the hospital.
So this is going to result then in most likely babies being born addicted.
Yes. Sadly, yes. We know that that's happening now. We were excited to help to make a dent in that and provide some education and support. But unfortunately, in our community, we're seeing an increase in babies born every day, sadly. Yes.
How do the babies recover from that? Are they able to be medically helped after they're born?
Lee Health is very much involved in addressing this problem. Yes, I know it's a long road. Recovery is certainly after the medical crisis. Then you have the ongoing psychosocial recovery. And for some of these babies, this has a lifetime and lasting effect. So as a community, we all need to be actively involved to help these babies heal and get well.
Well, aside from tugging at the heartstrings, I mean, just looking at straight up dollars and cents, it costs a lot to medically get a child through the crisis of being born addicted.
Correct.
Probably more than the cost of helping outreach with mothers.
Yes.
We're talking about a budget cut of $750,000 for Fort Myers Salus Care, one of many programs across the state who are adjusting to the fact that the Florida legislature allowed a $20.4 million federal grant for mental health and substance abuse care to lapse. We are talking with the CEO of Salus Care, Stacy Cook-Hawk. So today is the third year anniversary of the death of comedian Robin Williams. And just this May, musician Chris Cornell committed suicide. This week, musician Sinead O'Connor posted a video of herself literally crying out for help. It seems like every time we lose a celebrity or we see or hear of people suffering with mental illness or addiction, there's a wave of compassion and calls to do more to help people. How does that happen?
You know, when someone with this sort of status, Robin Williams, popular musicians, pass on from substance use or from a mental illness, it gives it a different level of realness. I think a lot of our community, because of stigma, when I say community, I'm speaking to the United States, there's a great deal of stigma that still revolves around behavioral health disorders, both mental health and substance use. Unfortunately, you can't typically see a behavioral health disorder like you can see a broken leg or a broken arm, or there's not a level of acceptance like high blood pressure, heart disease, cancer. And behavioral health disorders are exactly the same as those. These are diseases. There's a disease process that is absolutely similar, if not identical, to high blood pressure, diabetes, as it is with behavioral health disorders. So because we can't see it until we get this huge amount of press and attention, I think we turn that blind eye because of stigma.
Because we don't feel attached to it. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe people haven't had a loved one that's been helped by something like Salus Care, or somebody hasn't actually personally dealt with it. As personal as we can get is knowing of a celebrity who had this problem, so you kind of feel a little bit connected and
exactly.
Then care. But then translating that into actually doing something instead of just giving it lip service, is the stigma still there in spite of the overt statements to the contrary.
It is still there. It absolutely is. We've come a long way. Actually, last year, we Salus Care partnered with Emily Robinson on the East Coast. Her mom is diagnosed with schizophrenia. And we are annually doing a Shatter the Stigma campaign because stigma is huge. If stigma didn't exist around behavioral health disorders, we would see funding increase. We would see research increase. We would see the community viewing it exactly as we view high blood pressure, diabetes. So stigma plays a huge role in what we're talking about today, funding of behavioral health disorders in particular.
And that's becoming difficult for people now with the opioid epidemic to understand who it is that's being impacted, because people who have not been around addiction or haven't dealt with that at all generally think addicted to drugs, Skid Row. I mean, you're thinking of somebody that is a junkie, but that tell me who the people are that are becoming addicted to opiates in our community.
Primarily, the people that we're serving are you and I, the collective us, individuals who are trying to keep a job, who had a surgery or an accident, got addicted to – very naturally got addicted to opioids, painkillers, and then are coming to us to seek care. My mother – became addicted to opioid pain medication. She's a nurse. This is someone who is a professional, someone who knows better, and who very naturally became addicted and was able to get multiple prescriptions. I mean, we're meeting with people every day who are very successful, very powerful, doing very well, moms, dads, sisters, brothers, and they're saying, I didn't ask for this. I was just taking a medication. I was trying to get rid of pain. Next thing you know, I couldn't get a prescription, and then I started using heroin. These are not just bums on the street. People eventually progress to that if left untreated, but we are treating the collective you and I. That's who we see every day at Salus Care and other behavioral health organizations in Florida.
I think a lot of people just don't understand that because they don't see it because they're not right there.
You're right.
I want to talk a little bit about the children that you serve. I understand you're going to have to cut the number of beds offered to kids in crisis from 16 to 10. That's going to affect up to 800 children a year. Who are these kids and what are their crises?
These are children that are age 5 up to 17 who may be suicidal. We know that's the third leading cause of death. They may be depressed. They may be suffering with an unmanaged mood disorder. And they need a safe place to stabilize, see a psychiatrist and a treatment team to begin to either continue or get back on medication, and to also get connected with other essential counseling, case management type services. So again, these are our children. These are kids that are going to school every day and living in our community that are coming to us to get critical help. It's comparable to emergency room care. We're just emergency room behavioral health care. And then what we do is we move on children and families to lesser levels of care to help them to maintain wellness in the community.
And we're just about out of time, but I wanted to get in real quick. Have you had a chance to talk with lawmakers about the prognosis for this funding situation?
I have had the opportunity to talk to a few lawmakers, and one in particular who's been a support to us understands this is a huge and devastating blow and is working very hard to get to the bottom of how we got here today.
And to fix it before the next budget?
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Stacy Cook Hawk, CEO of Salus Care in Fort Myers. Thanks so much for coming in to talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, a look back at a conversation that has new importance after a mid-year report on syphilis. The number of people confirmed infected spiked this year. That story is coming up next. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.